The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugpolicyfacts.org and healthsystemsfacts.org. The state of Washington is considering whether to decriminalize personal use possession of controlled substances. They're following the lead of Oregon. Loyal listeners will recall that voters in my home state of Oregon overwhelmingly approved Measure 110, the Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act, in the 2020 general election. The Washington legislature is considering House Bill 1499, providing behavioral health system responses to individuals with substance use disorder. The Washington House Public Safety Committee held a hearing on that measure on February 12th. We're going to hear some of the testimony on today's show. First, let's hear from Meg Martin. She's the executive director of Interfaith Works in Olympia, Washington.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Meg Martin, and I'm the executive director of Interfaith Works here in Olympia. Thank you to the chair and committee for the opportunity to speak. We are a coalition of diverse faith-based organizations working toward justice and peace. We currently operate two 24/7 shelters and are building permanent supportive housing. We are a known, trusted, and experienced leader in the community when it comes to addressing chronic homelessness, including substance, which encompasses a cornucopia of complex issues, including substance use disorder. I could go on and on about how desperate people are for help with their addictions, but today, instead, I want to talk a little bit more about my own story. At the age of 13, I started binge drinking regularly. Shortly after that, I began using drugs recreationally as a young teenager. While I grew up in a very supportive and secure home, I dealt with incredible depression and anxiety and had experienced difficult trauma at a young age. When I was between my junior and senior year of high school, I was taken advantage of by a classmate. I was blacked out from alcohol and he raped me. When I woke up because of what he was doing to me, I drove home drunk that night because I was too afraid that I would get in trouble with my parents if I was honest and asked them for help. It wasn't until I was in treatment at age 24 for heroin addiction after overdosing from a speedball. That's an injection of heroin mixed with cocaine. That I finally told them what had happened to me the night that I was raped. The reason I am here today, a leader in my community who has made significant change in my field, is because I had the opportunity to get the resources and the help I need when I needed it most. Every single day I talk to people trying to get the help they need and they can't because they've got a warrant for a prior or a court date or a possession ticket that they can't miss before they get into treatment. This bill gives me hope, that people like me who are leaders in the rough, waiting to get a place to a place in their own healing to become the leaders we need right now, really need to be able to get access to the help that they need when they need it most. This bill will help me keep fighting another day. Please pass House Bill 1499, and thank you very much for your time.
That was Meg Martin, Executive Director of Interfaith Works in Olympia, Washington. Now let's hear from Meta Hogan. She's a program administrator at Gather Church in Centralia, Washington.
Hi, I'm Meta Hogan. I work as a program administrator at Gather Church in Centralia, which is in Lewis County in the 20th District. And in case I ramble on and run out of time, just so that nobody has any question, I'm completely in favor of this Bill 1499, Pathways to Recovery. So at Gather Church, we have a number of different programs. We actually do a good variety of things. We've got a Meds First Low Barrier Suboxone Clinic. We've got the Coordinated Entry Grant for Lewis County, so we're doing all of the homeless housing referrals. We do care coordination for folks who stay in the shelters here. We have a meal program, food box delivery, clothing bank, and a small residential recovery program for men. And in most of those positions, we've got people with lived experience doing the direct service. So I've been with Gather for about 3 months, but I've been doing this kind of work for 2 decades, supporting people who are experiencing homelessness, mental health challenges, and disordered substance use. And in those 2 decades, I've spent most of my waking hours giving serious thought to what is personally good for the development and well-being of other human beings. I've worked with hundreds of individuals and families struggling with disordered substance use. Personally, since we're talking about pathways, I've got some visual aids. Personally, a lot of folks who struggle with this will tell you their personal journey looks something like this. Am I right? It's not linear. But that complexity is for the biographers, and as policymakers, you have a choice about which kind of pathways to support.
30 seconds, please.
With your resources, voice, and intention. For too many people, when they get caught in the criminal legal system, their recovery pathway looks like this. They go around and around. And if they get out, if they're lucky enough, they might get into treatment. But in the meantime, it's expensive. We spend a lot of money spinning that wheel. And this cycle isn't harmless or irrelevant. It traumatizes individuals, breaks up families, creates burdensome legal financial obligations, and throws up barriers to housing and employment. It's counter to recovery. As I've seen at Gather Church and in much of my previous experience, when we put people with lived experience in a position to design and deliver treatment and recovery services, we supercharge individuals' recovery and community resilience. We have the opportunity to make this pathway easier for people who are struggling rather than putting resources into pathways that make it more difficult for people to access recovery. Opponents have suggested that this is the first step.
Thank you very much.
Opponents have suggested that this is the first step on a slippery slope. And I would say if this is a slippery slope toward encouraging recovery, let's bring it on. Great. Thank you.
That was Meta Hogan. She's a program administrator at Gather Church in Centralia, Washington. Let's hear now from a couple of prosecutors who testified. First, here's Adam Cornell. He's the elected prosecuting attorney for Snohomish County, Washington.
Thank you, Chair Goodman, members of the committee. Adam Cornell, Snohomish County prosecuting attorney. I'm here today urging you to support House Bill 1499. It's time to treat the illness that is substance use disorder as the public health threat that it is, so that we can better and more effectively address the public safety concerns that stem from the disease. It is time to recognize that what we have been doing as a state to criminally address simple possession of a controlled substance is not and cannot work. It has not worked because we've not allocated sufficient resources and public goodwill toward those who are suffering from this disease. It has not worked because of the extraordinary punitive and collateral consequences of a felony conviction for simple possession. It has not worked because of its disproportionate impact on people of color. It has not worked because it has shamed many who are still who are ill and seeking treatment and preventing them from doing so. And it has not worked because it has not made our communities any more safe and livable. We need this bill to replace the criminal punishment with a promise of recovery by the allocation of resources, which I think everyone so far has agreed is absolutely necessary. To the skeptics and opponents and those who are interested in keeping an open mind, here's what the bill does not do. The bill does not decriminalize other crimes or take away the discretion to arrest or charge those with other crimes. It doesn't get rid of our drug courts. It doesn't take away the prerogative of employers to maintain a drug-free workplace. And it doesn't take effect immediately. I anticipate an amendment that would take effect in July of 2023 that gives us the time to do this right and put a readiness check in the next legislative session. The wisdom of the times is not timeless. It is now time for a change and a new birth of wisdom. I urge you to support this bill, and it's a bill that is supported by communities all over the state and not a bunch of fuzzy-headed, progressive-centric elites, as you have heard already from the people who have expressed their support for this bill. I urge your support. Thank you.
Now here's the prosecuting attorney for King County, Seattle, Dan Satterberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Dan Satterberg, prosecuting attorney. I've been a prosecutor for 36 years now, and I'll tell you that prosecuting people for possession of tiny amounts of drugs, we wouldn't be in the overdose crisis that we're in today. It is simply not an effective strategy. I want to show you first one thing so we can all get centered. This is a gram. It's a Splenda pack. That's a gram. The Oregon committee that just set the limits for decriminalizations set possession of 1 gram of heroin or 2 grams of cocaine. It's not an ounce. It's not a kilo. It's a tiny, tiny amount consistent with the need to use drugs daily or to be sick. So the important question that you should ask your prosecutor is what really happened in our court system when you prosecute somebody for a tiny amount of drugs? And the answer is not very much. It is not going to be the answer to the substance use disorder or the overdose crisis that we have. In King County, when we looked at hard at what we did with people who had possessed less than a gram, we found that it took more than a year to resolve. That each case had more than 1.5 warrants. Each person spent 15 days in jail, not as punishment, but because they got arrested because they missed court dates. at the end of the day, this you shouldn't assume that you know, and you shouldn't assume that courts is there as a path to treatment for people with tiny amounts of drugs. The best thing about this bill is it's finally an acknowledgement that the strategy to help us manage substance use disorder does not lie in prosecution, in jail, and in courts. For tiny amounts of drugs, that strategy is much better in the community, making those connections. So as difficult as passing this bill might be, I think the real challenge for this legislature is to fund it. And that's where the rubber meets the road here. We need to build the instead. If you're not going to go to court, let's build something else that works better. If we don't, there'll be a backlash. There'll be a lot of push to double down on recriminalization of possession of drugs. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Graham has a quick question.
Thanks, Chair Goodman. And this question can be answered by either or both of the prosecuting attorneys. With the example that was just given, you'll have to excuse me, I don't have an extreme amount of experience with drugs or hard drugs. The examples that were just given, is that sufficient to cause impairment for somebody that might either be driving or working? Because there is some concern with a lot of the businesses when, take for example, you're working on something where you're fixing somebody's brakes or tires, or you're doing an operation, that this could cause some concern for employers if this is decriminalized. So I'm just asking, with the amounts that you've shown, is that sufficient to cause some serious impairment to an individual?
Well, Dan, do you want to take that first?
Go ahead. Good.
Well, as I said earlier, Representative Graham, this bill would not in any way impact an employer's ability to set expectations and standards in the workplace. But certainly a simple possession amount of a controlled substance can alter somebody's mood and can alter their state. Absolutely. But employers are going to retain the right and duty to keep a safe workplace. And if they so choose to terminate people who are not doing what they're supposed to do.
That was Dan Satterberg. He's the elected prosecuting attorney for King County, Washington. He was preceded by Adam Cornell, the elected prosecuting attorney for Snohomish County, Washington. They were testifying before the Washington State Legislature's House Public Safety Committee in favor of House Bill 1499, a measure to provide behavioral health system responses to individuals with substance use disorder. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The state of Washington is basically attempting to do through the legislature what my home state of Oregon is trying to do through the ballot box. Passing Measure 110 was only the start of the battle. Our state legislature here in Oregon is currently working on the implementation of Measure 110. I am cautiously optimistic. I know that many of our legislators do understand the need for treatment alternatives. I think that they do understand the need for services beyond just substance use treatment, things like housing, things like mental health care, other behavioral and other physical health issues. I'm fairly sure that they do understand this. What concerns me about the state of Oregon is that when they came up with the legislative assignments and the different committee assignments for this session, the Senate Judiciary Committee was renamed the Senate Committee on the Judiciary and the Implementation of Ballot Measure 110. Not the Behavioral Health Committee, not the Human Services Committee, not any of the other committees that deal with all of the other things that Measure 110 addresses. No, they're leaving it in the hands of the Judiciary Committee, which is the one that's in charge of the criminal laws, which is, in some respects, the one that screwed all this stuff up in the first place. Now, putting this in the hands of the Public Safety Committee in Washington makes sense because they're at the point of trying to approve this reform and trying to get approval for this reform, trying to move it through the legislature, it makes sense for a committee like public safety or a judiciary or someone like that. It would make sense for them to be saying, hey, let's take a different approach because this thing focusing, you know, our efforts in this area we're in charge of, this thing isn't working and we need more help on these other areas. That makes perfect sense. The implementation of ballot measure 110 here in my home state of Oregon, that takes a lot more than the criminal justice system. This is something that involves behavioral health. It involves health care. It involves housing and a lot of community services that are way outside of the purview of the criminal justice, really way outside. The whole point is to start addressing drug policy as a health issue, but not as a criminal justice issue. So again, this worries me, and we'll see what happens, and I will report to you as things progress. Because after all, this is Century of Lies, and I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's get back now to talking about the state of Washington and its House Bill 1499, which again is a measure to provide behavioral health system responses to individuals with substance use disorder, to decriminalize simple possession, move away from the criminal justice response and toward a more holistic, balanced, and effective, and sensible, and smart response to substance use.
Right, maybe it's not so cool, you dip it in some weed. All right. You know where I'm coming from? Things I don't want to do. I don't like to wash dishes, but I don't mind getting high and washing dishes. You understand where I'm coming from? Right. It takes an extra hour because I have to make a playlist. Right, my wash the dishes playlist is off the hook, though. You feel me? It's got different songs depending on how many dishes, what kind of dishes. There's extra spoons. There's more Soundgarden. All right, Spooner. So I just love it. I love it. And I'm so proud of Washington for being one of the first states to legalize weed. That's awesome. I live in California, and I can't wait. I can't wait till we legalize weed because I would like to open a Bud and Breakfast. Right? Would you come see me at the Wake and Bacon?
Yeah.
Would you visit me?
Yeah.
Right? Good morning. Good afternoon, really, because we're not going to get up that early. You understand? Matter of fact, I'm going to put a chocolate on your pillow. It's going to knock you out. You're going to wake up refreshed, wander into the kitchen. Hey, you're just in time for lunch. Who doesn't want to have lunch? Right?
Now, this committee, in addition to hearing from people from the community all across the state, they also heard from experts outside the state of Washington. Here's Ruth Dreyfus, the former president of Switzerland.
Thank you so much for your understanding, honorable representatives of Washington State. Thank you for the invitation. I will speak in the name as a member of the Global Commission on Drug Policy and from my more than 30 years experience with narcotic laws in Switzerland. But let me first express my deep recognition for the quality of the proposed House Bill 1499. The description is holistic of the problem we are facing or you are facing, and compassionate and evidence-based regarding the solutions. Some people are using illegal drugs for enjoyment, as many more are doing it with legal psychoactive substances like alcohol or tobacco. Others try to mitigate physical or mental pain in a kind of self-medication. Most are able to control their consumption and stay well integrated in society and professional life. But a minority, estimated at around 10% of illicit drug users, become dependent, a recognized disease with high relapse risk. Why should the state punish all these people? The free choice of those who control their consumption and don't harm others should be respected. To those who are ill of addiction, access to treatment should be guaranteed. A large spectrum of treatments has to be offered in order to choose the one fitting best to the situation of each individual. For some, willing and able to reach abstinence, cures in hospital, in day clinics, or in ambulatorium are useful. But for others, substance substitutions may help to restore a life balance and end marginalization if they go along with social services, job, and housing facilities. It is time to break with the predominant approach of criminalizing those who use and possess drugs. Such policies are enacted with the false hope that, combined with efforts targeting the production and supply of drugs, the drug market and use can be eliminated. This never, ever was successful, on the contrary. Moreover, such policies inevitably bring many negative consequences. The high incarceration rates, higher in the USA than in all other countries, with its 25% of the worldwide rate, number of people in detention, criminal records building obstacles to jobs and housing, access to non-compulsory treatments made more difficult, the spread of HIV and hepatitis C. It is also evident that the implementation of arrests and punishments is arbitrary, targeting more the poor and the member of marginalized communities than those who live on the sunny side of the society, with the consequence of fracturing the necessary confidence between the targeted population and the state. In order to begin mitigating these widespread harms, authorities at all levels must urgently decriminalize the possession of drugs for personal use. I was asked to be very brief. I would be delighted if you are interested to answer questions about the reforms which took place in my country, Switzerland, on innovative treatments, harm reduction measures, and the path toward decriminalization, sharing with you lessons, as I said before, of 30 years of experience. Thank you.
That was Ruth Dreyfus, former president of Switzerland. Now, here's Dr. João Goulao, Portuguese Drugs and Alcohol National Coordinator and Director General of the Intervention on Addictive Behaviors and Dependencies General Directorate, or SICAD, which is the body within Portugal's health ministry that's responsible for policy coordination in that field.
I'm the National Drugs Coordinator of Portugal, and I'm very happy to join you, and I thank this opportunity also to meet my good friend Ruth Dreyfus and Caitlin Hughes. I would share very briefly, and I will try to stick to the time. First of all, the first Portuguese drug strategy of 1999 was the result of the work of a multidisciplinary team nominated by the government to address the dramatic situation we were living at the time related to heroin use. It was a true epidemic or pandemic on heroin. 1% of our population at the time was hooked on heroin, and it was devastating our society. The committee included professionals from law enforcement, namely a judge, and professionals from the health and social services side. It is a comprehensive document based in the principles of humanism and pragmatism that addresses both the supply and demand areas, with proposals on prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and reintegration of people who use drugs. Drug use was considered as a health and social issue rather than a criminal one, and the strategy included the proposal of decriminalization. It must be considered as one of the components of a comprehensive strategy, which introduces coherence into the system. It led to a change in one single article of our drugs law, the law that came from 1993, the article that deals with use and possession for personal use. All the rest of that 1993 law is still in place. I must say that using drugs is still forbidden in Portugal. We keep in line with United Nations conventions that move in a prohibitionist paradigm. However, it does not lead to criminal procedures or to a trial in a court of law. We can compare the use of drugs in the same way our police authorities deal with traffic misdemeanors. For example, wearing or not wearing the seatbelt. Nowhere the conventions impose criminal procedures, so we still have administrative sanctions. But those are applied by a committee under the Ministry of Health, who can apply fines or other sanctions, but whose main goal is to identify the needs of the citizen that we have in front of us and to address him to the adequate responses. If he's in need of a treatment for a dependency, for addiction, is invited to join. It's not compulsory, but anyway, is invited, and he or she has his life facilitated in assessing this kind of response. But if he's not a dependent, if someone playing with drugs in a recreational way, even then the commission tries to assess what kind of needs this person have, some kind of difficulty, social, family, whatever, psychological, and they may offer free of charge any kind of support that this person may have. In fact, this contributes to decrease the number of new problematic users that we have in our country. Such the limit is established by on the basis of the amounts of substances that the person has on them. In our case, it's calculated on the basis of a 10-day personal use. If you have more than that with you, we undergo criminal procedures. You may or not end up in prison. But if you have less than that, you never, you do not get a criminal record that stands for life and contributes to stigmatize people. And people are much more keen to approach the responses available. We have a universal health system for free, so it's easy to cover all the needs of the people.
Mr. Glenn, let me just interrupt you, and only because we have limited time. Is the experience in Portugal, since you have decriminalized, and it's been 20 years now, that you have seen reductions in addiction rates, reductions in death, reductions in transmission of disease, reductions in youth initiation of these drugs?
We have a clear improvement in all the indicators available. A decrease in overdoses deaths, a decrease in HIV and hepatitis transmission, a delay in the age of experimentation of drugs that tended to be around the 11, 12 years old in the beginning, and nowadays people start experimenting around 14, 15 years old. There's a decrease in problematic drug use, so we have halved, more or less, from the 100,000 that we had in 1999, we estimate that we can have nowadays around 30,000 people with problematic use. And also criminality, mostly petty crimes, acquisitive crimes, have decreased dramatically since the approval and the implementation of this strategy.
That was Dr. João Goulao, Portugal's Drugs and Alcohol National Coordinator. He was testifying before the Washington State Legislature's House Public Safety Committee in favor of House Bill 1499, a measure to provide behavioral health system responses to individuals with substance use disorder. For now, that's it. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.